Welcome to Good Errors Podcast. I'm Jared Kimber, and today we're going to talk about Joe Root because we're in the middle of doing a big video on Joe Root, and it's on something that I'm very interested in, and you'll see in a couple of days. But essentially, it's how and what might stop him from, you know, going past Sachin's record, looking at how players make runs as they get older and all these sorts of things. It's a really cool one. But he's gone so nuts recently that it's kind of like he skipped a level, I believe. And now there's almost a, certainly right at the moment, and we see this when players do this all the time, but there's suddenly this very loud call that he's England's best batter ever. And of course, I love Joe Root. I think I've been a big fan of him from the start. I've watched so many of his runs. I love the way he goes about it. I love the way he thinks about cricket. But I'm also a cricket historian, and I'm, you know, do a lot of statistics and analysis and all this sort of stuff. And you start to think to yourself, well, England's had a lot of very good batters. But for most fans, of course, cricket is their last few years, and probably the few years when they're actually watching the most amount of cricket. That's usually probably from your teenage years to your mid-20s when your life gets a little bit too serious and you can't do that. And so if you're under the age of 50, like, I think you could make a fairly solid case that Joe Root is the best batter that England have had since 1980. I don't think that's a particularly touchy one. You would look at Graham Gooch, and I think he had a phenomenal career at, you know, beyond the age of 30. But his record is still patchy, despite being, you know, as good as he was against the West Indies. Which I think does give him a boost. And then of course, you have Alistair Cook and Kevin Peterson as the other modern ones. But that is not where English cricket starts. It doesn't start with the period of cricket that you remember, right? It starts in 1877. And so, you know, when we start to look at these things, you have to put that all in perspective. And we saw this with Anderson as well. You know, anytime Anderson would go on a bit of a tear, especially, what, over the age of 35 or 36, it would be, is he England's best bowler ever? And a lot of people who hadn't seen the older bowlers, like Fred Truman is a perfect example of, Fred Truman's record is fucking insane. And I think that it would be unfair to see Fred Truman's record and then just be like, well, Jimmy Anderson's taken more wickets, and so he's better than that. And there is an issue with the Jimmy Anderson, Alistair Cook, and Joe Root records that isn't their fault. And it doesn't really take away from their greatness, but what it does is, they play so many matches and they have the ability to take so many wickets in a way that other players just never did, right? So, I mean, if you look at Fred Truman's overall record in first-class cricket, you're suddenly looking at something completely different. He took 307 wickets for England, but he took 2,304 wickets, an average of 18.29 in first-class cricket, right? So Jimmy Anderson doesn't have to deal with any of that, right? Fred Truman played Test cricket on the side. His main job was playing county cricket. That's what he did. And so you have a career in Truman's case where he plays from 1952 until 1965. So only 13 years, but his first class career is 1949 to 1969, which is 20 years, right? So now you're getting to that Jimmy Anderson level. And so we could see this kind of all the way through, right? Of the actual amount of time that some of these other guys play is similar, but the numbers don't look the same. And so when you're looking at Boycott versus Cook, which I think is a really good, and throw Gooch in there, those three really interesting arguments for, you know, maybe best post, post 1965 level openers, like who is the best out of those three? Cook's numbers are just completely juiced by the amount of times he actually played, right? And the other guys weren't challenged as in as many places or as often as Cook was. Did I say Cook a minute ago? Or Root? I meant Cook, of course. And so you're constantly having this kind of weird battle of how to do things. And because we now have Anderson, Root, and Cook, there's three of them, right? And you can throw Broad in there as well. Where Broad goes, I was having a conversation with an English fan the other day, and they were saying, you know, do you have Broad as the second best bowler ever? Second best seam bowler ever. And I went, no, Broad doesn't have himself as the second best seam bowler ever. But in this person's mind, he's like, well, how could you possibly take that many wickets? So there's all that sort of modern counting stats of English cricket. It's kind of an asterisk on top of everyone else. And if you go back through the history of cricket, it actually has always been there with English players because of the first-class cricket as well. So we've seen this before. But when it comes down to it, I just wanted to have a look at a bunch of the other players that Root would actually be going up against. Like, who are the players who are legitimately in that conversation as better than him? So we've already talked about Cook, and you can probably throw Boycott in there as well. I'm kind of midway through my, you know, my book on the 50 greatest batters. The actual book's being finished, but midway through the process of it, and the list is still changing and everything else. I've got Alistair Cook and Boycott a long way down. I think they're both fantastic players, and I think they're both underrated players when you go through their overall records, but they're not on the level of Root. And the other player that I would throw in is KP, who, again, I think is probably... KP is such an interesting one because of his ability to change a game so quickly, but also the fact that he did play in that sort of peak period and has a relatively short career. But I'm not sure there are many players in the world who had the ability to change the direction of where a test match was going the way that KP does. But none of those guys, and Gooch would be another one, I don't think you're quite put in on this level. There's heaps of older players as well, some of which I'm massive fans of. But I think Root has overcome just a whole bunch of them. But there's a couple of really interesting players that I think we can have a look at. And these are the ones I think are more on a similar level to Root or in that similar place. But I want to go back to the start here, and I want to talk about WG Grace. So WG Grace is absolutely fascinating as a test player because he doesn't start playing tests until he's a full-time doctor. So essentially it's the 1870s when he's really probably at his peak. I can't remember when his peak is. I think his peak... Well, for him, I think he might have like a 15-year period where he's just absolutely incredible, starting from the mid to late 60s into the 1800s, and then 1880s, I should say. And then he changes things a little bit in the 1880s, and he doesn't play quite as much cricket, and he becomes a doctor, right? But in the 1880s, when he did play tests, so he averages... So he scores 542 runs at an average of 36, which is not a lot of runs from 11 matches. But the other players in that period have already started to catch up to him. And you've got Arthur Shrewsbury is on a similar level. So I think 1870s, WG Grace is perhaps even close to that sort of Bradman level. And by 1880s, he's already starting to slip down. And by the 1890s, he's well and truly past it. I think he plays his last test when he's almost 50, right? He's still a good player in test cricket, but you can't really have him in that kind of a lineup. And the other really interesting of the earlier players, I think, that comes through is Ranji. So Ranji is such a fascinating story, but he only plays 15 test matches. But in those test matches, he averages 45 in a period when that wasn't that common. But in first-class cricket at that point, he scored 24,000 runs at 56.37. Again, I just don't think the amount of matches that he plays is probably fair. But unlike Grace, he does play kind of in his peak. He should have played more tests, of course. He wasn't always picked for England because local authorities would decide, well, sort of the local selectors, I'm using the selectors word, but essentially whoever ran the cricket ground would invite the English team they wanted to play. And so there are lots of cases of different players playing and not playing at different venues. And of course, with him, because of his ethnicity and his skin color and everything else, there was an issue. I think he was called a bird of fancy or something at one stage, despite the fact that England had plenty of players who'd been born in Australia or South Africa or grown up in other places and everywhere else. But he was singled out for that. So he didn't play as much. Again, I think Ranji is probably slightly further down the list for me. But Grace is probably right up there at that Joe Root level. But because of what he actually did specifically in test cricket, I think it's still hard to give him the extra credit for that. He didn't take test cricket that seriously either, which is another very important thing because that's not where he made the majority of his money. But that's for another day. But if that's where we put Grace and Ranji, we can sort of, you know, move past them a little bit. Then you get into, I think, two really interesting players, which is Wally Hammond and Herbert Sutcliffe. So if I've now lost, I've got all my numbers here, and of course I've lost them all. So if you look at the England players who have scored more than 2,000 runs, Sutcliffe has the highest average, excuse me, everyone, of 60.73 in his, 54 matches. And then Hammond averages 58.45, right? This is an era when there's a lot of very high batting averages. Bradman, obviously, is the one of their era that overlaps with both of these guys. And then the other one, of course, is George Headley. And George Headley and Bradman both average significantly higher than Sutcliffe and Hammond. The problem with Headley is he comes back after the war when he probably shouldn't have played on, and he completely tanks his average. But he was much higher before the war. And so if you look in the period of which, you know, Sutcliffe and he overlap, like Headley comes out on top. I still think these guys are absolute great players. They've both got very good cases to be top 20 of all time. I don't have either of them in my top 10, for instance, but I think they're absolutely fantastic players. But I don't see them as being massively better than Joe Root. So I think you can make arguments for, you know, and I would probably, it probably comes about where you look at them. So with Hammond and Sutcliffe, I think you can make arguments for them to be as high as, let's say, ranked in the top 10, 7th or 8th. But I think you could also make arguments that they would be around the 20 mark when it comes to those sorts of things. So if you're looking at it more from a range, I think Root's range is very similar to Sutcliffe and Hammond's at the moment. So if you were to tell me that Joe Root is a better player than those two, I think I could have that argument. I think I could live with it. I'm not really wedded to any of these, right? I'm just sort of going through it off the top of my head and looking at my old list and my work and all these sorts of players. And, you know, for the book, we went really, really deep. And I'm not quite doing that today, but I'm remembering some of the stuff that I had. You know, obviously, we know that Hammond struggled a little bit with the short ball and everything else. And the fact that Sutcliffe had so many good players around him as well. It was clearly a great batting era. You've got to put all those sorts of things in. But again, I think both of those players have very, very good arguments to be at the same level as Joe Root. But perhaps Joe Root is already at the very least at that level, and you could argue has gone beyond them, right? So then the next player that you're looking at, I was about to give you Fred Drummond's one. I think the next player that I find really interesting is Ken Barrington. So Ken Barrington has this sort of patchy record. The more I picked at his record, the more I felt less confident that he was a top 10 player of all time. But he does average 58.67. I think Barrington is absolutely a great. I think, again, it is hard to look at Root and Barrington and not think to yourself that Barrington isn't of a similar level, if not even still slightly ahead of him at the time. Plays for 13 years. Clearly has mental health issues that are probably, I don't want to say undiagnosed, but clearly not treated correctly at times. Moves all around the batting order as well. Don't get me started on, there's this period of time in English cricket from like 1950 to maybe even go as far as 1970, where like all their best batters from test to test would change batting numbers. It's so bizarre, and it doesn't seem to make any sense to me, and I've never seen anyone write about it, so I'm not sure exactly what the reason is. Anyway, Barrington, again, I would probably put in that Hammond Sutcliffe of clearly an England great, clearly a world great. I think you could have an argument if you go through their record line by line, and at that stage, you'd be looking at things like the fact that Root hasn't made runs in Australia and things like that. You'd be looking at some of Barrington's record as well, which, you know, again, has some interesting quirks to it, and he doesn't play anywhere nearly as many runs, but there's no doubt that Barrington was, again, a great player, and I think if you were to tell me that one of them is better than the other, I don't have a big argument against that. One of the things I loved about Barrington's record is that he averages 69 away from home. But I did go through some of the things he played away from home. I think at that stage, he probably didn't always go up against great bowling lineups in the series that he dominated. We've seen Root do very well against incredible bowling lineups, but perhaps, again, they're on a similar level. If you wanted to have Root slightly above Barrington, I think that's a fair conversation to have. I think right at the moment, they're very, very similar to me on the list. The next player that comes up, which I think this is where we're getting to the list of, I think everyone else, I'm just going through the entire list of English cricketers. I don't think there's any other player with a claim for England to be better than Root. I mean, Gale was prettier, right? And it's always nice to have a left-hander. But I don't think there's any other player in the history of English cricket that can really compare to Root. So Dennis Compton has an average of 50. But Dennis Compton averaged, I think, something like 37 away from home. I'm doing that one off the top of my head. But yes, there's no way you could compare his record to Compton. And also because Root's now quite an attacking player as well. And that was one of Compton's big skills. But Root can score at such a quick rate that, again, I think that separates him from Compton. And then you would have the sort of, I suppose, Ted Dexter would be the other player that would be worth looking at as well. Again, another fantastic player and did really, really well away from home. I just don't think he's quite on the level of Root. The more that I sort of went through his record, line by line, I didn't feel that it had held up anywhere near as strong as Root's would. If you are following my work, we know that you are a true cricket sadist and you need your hit every day. And sometimes, sadly, there is actually no cricket to watch. So how about if someone made a very fun game that you could use for the moments when there is no on-field action? Welcome to Hit Wicket, a strategic game of cricket, which isn't about slamming your finger on the screen very fast. You work out what works best based on how cricket actually works. Dot balls lead to wickets, ones and twos to fours and sixes. So there is no way you can bowl a great Yorker every ball or smash three sixes at the beginning of your innings. This is proper cricket. Yet it still has some gaming powers in there as well. Hit Wicket is about playing, but also building and managing your team. You are the batter, bowler, owner, coach, and captain. It's your dream. No ads, just cricket. So download Hit Wicket today, because this is a cricket game made for you and supported by major cricket nerds. So again, I'm just going through all those names. So there's then two more names that I do think still have a claim ahead of Joe Root at the moment. And we'll get to, we'll just start with the first one, which is Len Hutton. I think Len Hutton is one of, maybe the most underrated batter of, I think he's the most underrated great batter of all time. Barrington might, have a conversation there, and Callis might have a conversation as well. But I think they, Len Hutton was absolutely extraordinary. He was just hitting his peak when he went into World War II. He got injured during World War II. I don't think it was in service. I think it was a training exercise. But he lost an inch of his arm. And to be honest, I've lost an inch of my arm, and I don't think I'm a worse, and by that I'd mean, since breaking my arm, I don't quite have the same reach that I used to have. But he would have had to have changed his batting a little bit afterwards. I think there's no doubt that that played a part. And he also missed a lot of his peak. And yet you look at his record, and outside of four tests in New Zealand, it's just remarkable. So he averages over 50 in Australia, over 50 in England, over 55 in South Africa, and over 50 in West Indies. I think it's like 77 or something ridiculous in the West Indies. We don't have him in Asia, right? And that's the Sachin versus Bradman argument, right? It's exactly the same sort of thing. We know that Joe Root was an absolutely fantastic player in Asia and has done very, very well there at times, and has certainly been a fantastic player of spin. But we do know that Len Hutton, as an opening batter, to have an average of 57 when opening the batting is just remarkable. Absolutely. And he didn't do it in a high run scoring period like Herbert Sutcliffe did. He did it in a much trickier era. And in fact, you could argue he did it over two eras, and he missed his peak, and he did it with an injury and everything else. I think Hutton is one that I would find it hard to just automatically say that Joe Root is better than Len Hutton based on everything we know. This is one of my favorite things about Len Hutton is, it just shows you how much Test cricket has changed as well. He played in the fifth Test match of a series 11 times, which just shows how many long series were played back then. And the reason I looked this up is really fascinating. I saw it with him. It could just be a quirk, but I think he's the sort of player who over time would just start to work out players. And I think he was that much smarter than everyone else, that he had that ability to do it. Yeah, an incredible technician. I talked to some of his contemporaries, people who played with him, and they just said he just didn't make any mistakes. Very much, I suppose I would compare him to someone like Tendulkar, of just someone who everything was about making sure that the next ball was maximized, whether that be going for a boundary or looking for a single or, you know, whatever it may be, just never making a mistake and making everything about that next ball. And because he's so smart, his average in the first match in Test series is like 36 and a half. His average in the second match in Test series is 45. Third, 58. Fourth, 78. And then the fifth is 85. The longer he went up against bowling attacks, the better Len Hutton got. So there's no doubt that if you're an opener and you can average high 50s in a low scoring or a lowish scoring era, and you had to do it before the war and after the war, you miss some of your peak years and you're injured. Joe Root hasn't had to overcome a lot of that, but Joe Root's had to go up against other things. I would find it, I just don't think that Joe Root is a better player than Len Hutton right at the moment. And we can get to whether he can get past Len Hutton at the end. But right at the moment, if he was to retire, I still think Len Hutton is a better test batter. 6,971 runs, an average of 56.67 as an opener. Just absolutely mind-boggling. And I think he was a brilliant, brilliant player. So it's not a slight on Joe Root to say that Len Hutton was better than him, considering all that. So there's only one player left now because we've gone through WG Grace and some of the older guys. And then the last guy to look at is Jack Hobbs. I think Jack Hobbs is such a great player, but because it's from such an older era and because he comes between Grace and Bradman, he probably had that period, especially before Bradman, of being thought of as the greatest who'd ever played the game. But there's still people talking about Grace. And then Bradman comes along. So Hobbs probably never got the flowers that his talent deserved. But it is worth just reading out his record here. So in Test cricket, he averaged 56.94 in 61 matches. Weirdly enough, only had 7 not outs as well. Just a ridiculous record in Test cricket. And in first class cricket, he had 61,760 runs. That's 61,760 runs, an average of 50.7 with 199 or 197 hundreds. Statisticians can argue about that on their own. But the point being is that this is a remarkable career. He made his debut in Test cricket in 1908 and retired in 1930, so it was properly long. And he played 29 years of first-class cricket as well. So a little bit like Grace, just kept playing on and on, which did tank his average, I think, a touch. Certainly in first-class cricket, but a little bit in Test cricket as well. Or certainly, I shouldn't say it tanked his average in Test cricket, but certainly changed things. Here's the thing about Hobbs, though. He plays in an era where the pitches are just starting to get good, but they aren't the kind of wickets that we're talking about today. So, for instance, up until 1925, he has the most runs in Test cricket. He has 3,898 runs. So he's about 500 more than the next best player, which was the great Australian left-hander Clem Hill. Clem Hill averaged 39.21. And in that, up until 1925, the end of 1925, Hobbs averaged 58.17. Trumper, who is thought of as one of the greatest batters of all time, scored 3,100 runs, an average of 39.04. There isn't another player who averages anywhere near him. The closest is Stanley Jackson, who scored 1,400 runs up until that point, an average of 48. But if you look at Jackson's record overall in first-class cricket, he averaged 33. So my guess is that he made a lot of runs in a brief period of time. There's only two other guys who average over 40 up until the end of 1925. And that's Aubrey Faulkner, who, if you've been here before, you know I've talked about him quite a bit. And it was also, is it Herbie Taylor? I think it's Herbie Taylor, isn't it? Yeah, Herbie Taylor, the South African, who ended up averaging over 40 as well and was a fantastic cricketer. But that's it. So Jack Hobbs, essentially, of people who really make a lot of runs or can back it up with really good first-class records, he's like a mile. He's almost 20 runs more than what their second best batter of that era was. And he does go on to bat a little bit longer, of course. So there is an element of eventually he isn't the best batter in his side. So Sutcliffe and Hammond probably go past him. Of course, they should because they're young greats coming through. And so, again, I think that affects it. But when you really look at the fact that Herbie Taylor and Aubrey Faulkner and Warren Bardsley and Clem Hill and Victor Trumper were all great players of their era, and they all average around 40. And up until that point, Jack Hobbs was averaging 58.17. That's close to what Bradman and Grace did, right? That's what we're looking at there. We're looking at someone who has clocked cricket. And I really think that what Hobbs did was invent the first style of batting that really worked on flatter wickets. So what Hobbs did was really laid the groundwork for Bradman and Sutcliffe and Headley and Hammond. And then, of course, you know, Barrington and Hutton and all the way through to Root and Sachin and Coley and Lara and whoever else you want to put up there afterwards, you know, Cullis and Sangakkara and all these people. That modern batting style, because before that, it was very hard to bat for long periods of time because the wickets were so bad. And Hobbs comes along at a period where that is huge. But even if you just look at that period, from 1908 until 1925, he plays 43 matches, which is an awful lot of matches, actually. But he still misses out on World War One. But he actually continues to play beyond that and still is a very effective player for a long period of time. I just don't, again, it's the same thing. He's got the same argument that we talked about earlier when it comes to Hutton. Hobbs doesn't play in that many places, right? Test cricket is just expanding at that point. So he plays in Australia, England, and South Africa. He never plays against the West Indies in the West Indies. He does play against them and he smashes them everywhere. In Australia, he averaged 58. In England, he averaged 53, and in South Africa, which some of this would have been on matting wickets, he averaged 65 coming through there. So it's a phenomenal record. And again, I don't think it's unfair to Root to say that he's not better than Jack Hobbs, because Jack Hobbs has an argument to be one of the greatest test batters of all time, one of the three greatest test batters of all time, and probably is up there with Tendulkar and Bradman as three guys who you could make, if you're looking at their range, I mean, Bradman's range is probably one, he can only be one, but if you're looking at their range altogether, those are guys who can all be the, who have an argument to be the thought of as the best batter of all time. Root doesn't have that argument, so I don't know how you put him in a conversation with Hobbs. Hutton is probably just behind those other three guys. But again, I don't have any problem with Root starting to enter his discussion. If Root has another four great years where he averages plus 45, but certainly plus 50 in the vast majority of them, it gets up to that Sachin landmark or even passes Sachin and continues to go on and continues to play at that kind of level, I think you then start to certainly have the Len Hutton conversation. And I think Root can jump over quite a few other players, but he has to keep playing at this level. And what we know is generally that's not what happened. It would slow down. I'm not sure what he has to do to beat Hobbs, because when you look at a player like Hobbs, he was so much better for 17 years than anyone else in world cricket. Like, we're talking almost 33% better than the players around him. Certainly more than, let's say 25% at least. How, and I've got the great players. How do you rate that compared to Root, who is absolutely fantastic, but in the same era he has Smith, who certainly outperformed him so far in his career. Who knows what will happen if they continue to play for another 3 or 4 years, but Root certainly has never had a level that Smith has got to. You've then also got Williamson and Coley, right? So it's not the same. It's not the same, and I don't think it's really fair. I don't think that means you can just flick Root's case away for being a top three England batter of all time, and certainly top five and top six. I think he's earned that conversation very much. But when you do get down to it, England have had a lot of great batters. What they haven't had is many great modern batters, and I think that's one of the key reasons that Root sticks out so much, is that look at the names I'm talking about. Jack Hobbs, who started playing cricket like more than 100 years ago. I talked about Grace and Ranji before, right? And even if you go to Gooch, we're talking about people from a long time ago. So it's Root is being compared to people in Hutton and Hobbs that both lost their careers to world wars. For everything that's happened, Joe Root had to bat at number three a lot in his career, and that probably stuffed up his overall numbers a little bit, although similar thing happened to Ken Barrington. But, that it's not the same as missing a big part of your career to a world war. So I think I'm trying to be as fair as I can as possible to everyone here, because I think everyone I've mentioned is a great batter. I think they're all, they've all got some level of batting that you could say puts them on the level of being certainly in England great, and in most of the cases an automatic world great as well. You could have some discussions around Gooch, I suppose, or maybe even KP if you wanted to. But most of the other players that we mentioned are just automatically some of the greatest batters of all time. And that is what Root is being compared to. And it's funny when you think about it, because the same thing is happening right at the moment to Root, because he's also being compared to Smith and Kohli and Williamson, right? And those are players who have all had very different kinds of careers to him. I don't think the other guys were ever forced to become openers, unless I'm forgetting Kane Williamson's early career. The other guys have been able to bat in the positions that they've wanted to be able to bat in, which again, Root didn't have. They of course don't get to play as many games as Root. Like, it's a really interesting one when you look at that. And what we are doing is comparing, and comparisons are the thief of joy. Is that the phrase? I think that's the phrase. The truth is that Root is one of the greatest batters of all time, and I don't think it really matters if he's England's greatest batter at the moment. And just because you weren't old enough to watch Hutton or Hobbs, I suppose no one was old enough to watch Hobbs, doesn't mean that they weren't also great. There's so many great players out there, but I'm sort of also happy to see Root in this kind of form, because this is the kind of Root that I, thought was absolutely magnificent, that was going to become this kind of player. And then we had the drop off, and I've written about it before. I wrote about it when he made the 200s in Sri Lanka or whatever they were, and then the big score in India, back to back to back. I wondered if that was Root at his peak, because he kind of missed his peak, unlike other players, comparing him to someone like Ponting, who we do in the next video. And it's like, maybe we haven't seen Root's peak yet. What would it mean if England, we know they have this incredible ability to stretch out these players' careers. What if we haven't seen Joe Root's peak yet? And the next couple of years, he's going to do something similar to what Graham Gooch did. And then the opposite is also true. What if this is it, and he's about to then just age out the way that most great players do? I don't think it matters. As I said, I think he's a fascinating player, and we've done this whole podcast on him, and then in a couple of days' time, you're going to have a whole other video over on the main channel as well. But that's been it is Joe Root already England's greatest batter? Thank you for everyone for sticking around. We'll take a quick break, and I'll just go through the comments as well. But that's the end of the main part of the show. You want to swing wildly at the internet like you've got the new pill in your hand, but you keep getting dead-butted. Find the movement you want with NordVPN. They are our protection against terrifying cyber threats and wide-battered geo-blocks. NordVPN will help you get through any rights restrictions so you can watch all the cricket you want. We aren't always happy with the wickets we're on. Sometimes we need a change. NordVPN can switch your virtual location so your IP address is ready to cash in. So if you need to get around the internet's rules, or I suppose in our case, laws, select NordVPN. They can help you watch a game on a cheaper stream in another country. Give NordVPN the ball and let them penetrate all your vast internet issues. Because if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, plus 4 additional months for free. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. You can also receive a 20GB daily data voucher. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a big hitter is coming for you at nordvpn.com/KIMBER right now. All right, just a couple of questions at the end. Raul says, statistically, yes, in terms of sheer entertainment. No, I enjoyed watching KP. So that's the other thing here. I am trying to look at this from a total thing, and I'm not looking at KP's entertainment. or Compton's entertainment, or, you know, any, or Boycott's lack of entertainment, right? I'm really looking at the impact. So when you're looking at those attacking batters, I think they're really interesting. But Root does have the ability to change the game really quickly as well. And he does it in a completely different way than KP, which I think is quite interesting. But statistically, no, he's not the greatest batter that's ever played for England. I mean, that would be Hobbs. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Busker says, Jared, best batter on tough wickets. Explain wet wickets. So wet wickets, essentially, if you've ever played club cricket, kind of in, certainly in Western countries, it doesn't seem to happen as much on the kinds of Asian wickets, but I would assume it happens in the wet, in Asia as well. Essentially what happens with a wet wicket is you get an inconsistency to the bounce where the ball can come up vertically at you. It can stop on the wicket and come really slow, or it could seemingly come very quick. Sometimes the ball can skid through, and specifically playing against faster finger spinners. So that's why England had so many of these kinds of finger spinners, and South Africa had a couple as well in that period of 1930s to 1960s for there's quite a few of them, but there's a few beforehand as well. And Australia used to have them. They were the first country to cover their wickets. And then everyone starts to cover their wickets eventually. So playing on that is a very different style. What we're talking about with Jack Hobbs, though, is actually I'm not saying pre-wet wickets, because wet wickets existed up until the wickets were finally covered. But what you saw with someone like Jack Hobbs was playing on what I would say is unsophisticated wickets. So he would have been playing on wickets as we were learning about the science of greenkeepery or curating, or however you want to put it. So it's a very, very different kind of batting that you had to do in those days. And so when you hear about, you talk about wet wickets, but you're also talking about uncovered wickets. And uncovered wickets actually get a really bad rap. I mean, Bradman made his runs on uncovered wickets because of how flat they were as well. Because for uncovered wickets, you kind of had to make a wicket that would completely handle all the conditions that were going to come to it. So it's a very different style of batting, but what we are doing really is we are rating Hobbs and Grace and Hutton and all these guys against the players of their era. The same as we're comparing Root to the players of his era. You can only overcome the conditions and the opposition that are in front of you at that time. So it's unfair to say, Bradman did it all on uncovered wickets, when we actually know uncovered wickets could be really good, but they could be the opposite. An uncovered wicket could be the flattest wicket you've ever seen or the most deadly wicket you've ever seen. And that was part of the issue of those wickets, which is, and also from an entertainment point of view, you couldn't play as much cricket. It ruined test matches, uncovered wickets, because you would get like 20 wickets fall in a short period of time just because of the conditions. And it really did ruin a lot of games. So we're in a much better situation to have covered wickets. I don't think wickets should be rolled after the start of games, but that's a different conversation. But yeah, so it was very different. And Basker also says, did Grace invent modern technique? Yes. So Grace invented footwork. So his ability, he was the first batter who really, before that, batters basically decided to come forward or go back. And what Grace decided was, wait a minute, some balls I need to come forward and some I need to come back. So that the ability to rock through, and you could see even in some of the footage of him, it was a bit rudimentary. It wasn't as polished as perhaps, other players would have been after him. But in showing that movement, he really did change things quite dramatically. So he invents that. You ask a question about Chandrapal's technique. Chandrapal basically, he's got a technique for high pace, which is what it was invented for. But if you look at Chandrapal's technique, by the time it comes down, he's essentially still in a very conventional position. But what he's doing is a two-eyed technique, and lots of players have tried two-eyed technique before. So Chandrapal's looks weirder, but there is an element of it actually making sense, and many other players have used it before him and after him. But his specifically came out because his dad was training him to face high pace. Jay says, Root was never really an all-format batter, unlike Virat Smith or Kane, hence more time to master his red ball game. Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I mean, he's probably played more white ball, so much white ball cricket, though, that you have to look at it from that point of view. He also was an all-format cricketer up until, 2016? He was still playing for England. So he did actually play quite a bit of T20 cricket early on, and he continues to play, obviously, in the 100 and everywhere else. So he's still playing white ball cricket, and he's certainly played a lot of one-day cricket. But England also didn't overtax him. So I think that plays a part. But I'm not sure what that has to do with this, because those other guys, you know, you're going to be shocked to know this. Jack Hobbs didn't play a lot of white ball cricket either, as far as I'm aware. Anyway, that's the end of the podcast. Thank you to everyone for listening in, and we'll see you again very soon for more of these kind of shenanigans over on the Good Areas podcast. And if you like the history chat and everything else, you should go and buy my book, which is called, where's my book? It's over here somewhere, isn't it? Which is called Overthrowing Cricket's Empire, which is features probably a lot of the cricketers that we talked about today. Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make any content, Minbo Pro is the tool for you. Take your long format content and cut it and slice it for social media. This AI-inspired weapon will turn your one piece of work into so many clips. Try Minbo.pro now.